Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce Garner Ted Armstrong of Ambassador College with The World Tomorrow. In this series of programs, we will tell you something of the problems of the world today, how they will affect you, and their solution in The World Tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, Garner Ted Armstrong.
Give me the hearts of the children and I will rule the world, said Lenin. Communists believe that doctrine. People in China believe that doctrine. They believe in those countries in a disciplined, sternly, rigidly disciplined and educated youth. And they believe through insistent teaching in inspiring the youth of those countries continually over generations if they can to believe in the principles of the founding fathers of the communist revolution. They believe in China that if enough of the masses of the landmass of Asia can be indoctrinated deeply, completely, and fully with these communistic and socialistic ideals, that they can rule the world. They can do so, they believe, by capturing the minds of children. Little babies, if they are reared from the time of their first awareness, right on up into teenage, hearing repetitions, slogans, continual emphasis on certain doctrines from a socialized state can become almost like an automaton, a mere hypnotized, idealized, absolutized, docile automaton, almost a mental slave to the precepts of a completely false, a wrong, a rotten, a heinous system which is striving now to take you and me and the entirety of the free world into slavery. And they're doing it by indoctrinating the youth. Yet we in the free world do not believe, it seems, in even disciplining our youth, let alone indoctrinating them. The idea that we should be a disciplined society, the idea that we could combat crime, immorality, drugs, that we could lick the divorce problem, that we could whip some of the problems that threaten to tear apart our society by training, by discipline at a very early age, is anathema to many people in a free society. Well, here we are with a global crime wave, a global, enormous avalanche of crime. Crime in high places, crime in high places of government. I believe some nations should be branded virtually as criminal nations. I think certainly in World War II that was true. That the public press and world public opinion branded the aggressor nations as criminal nations. War crimes trials went on. People have been sifting through the ashes of that. For many, many years it has gone by since, and both pro and con can be read and can be heard today. But you know, it is possible to conceive of a whole nation embarking upon a criminal course when you look at the entirety of the world community. But now look at the United States and Canada. Ridden with crime, our streets and our big cities, unsafe places. The housewives of our society having to go about in locked automobiles, fearful of parking lots outside the supermarket. Many elderly people retiring to senior citizens' villages where they are hiding behind moats, behind locked doors with gates, electronic devices, and security guards. Maybe, like as not, patrolled around the area with dogs. Moats. Now, literally, I'm not talking about way back in medieval society, but today there are many, many senior citizens' villages cropping up where one of the selling points is the tranquility, the peace, the serenity that these elderly people can have by coming out of society, going into such a village with a moat around it of all these homes and apartments. They've got their own golf course and their own little social center where they can go and play checkers and cards and where they can play shuffleboard, maybe a swimming pool, and all of these amenities that are provided in a closed society with a locked gate, a uniformed armed guard, and, you know, virtually a drawbridge. It's just getting to that place. Architecture has dramatically altered. The very living pattern of American homes and Canadian homes has changed. You know, you can't blame us for that. Very few people want to have their living room or their family room facing on the street anyhow because of all the busy traffic and what goes on out there in the street. So gradually architecture changed, where in the 30s, the living room was the room right there on the street, right on the sidewalk, where the family lived and could be found sitting in an evening. Now it's not that way. Now the homes are designed in such a way that there are whole buffer areas and people live in the rear of the home and their living area faces toward the backyard. And hopefully they've got a high fence or a great big stone wall. Apartment houses are becoming more and more like some of those way back in the medieval times and Middle Ages in places like France and Spain and later on in England. Built right on a sidewalk, and then inside will be a swimming pool and a recreation area. But entrance is gained by either a buzzer or a key or through a uniformed policeman of some sort. It's an enormously profound change in society that lawlessness, immorality, and crime is working upon us. But we're afraid, it seems, to get right down to the basic essentials of what causes crime. Why crime? How can we combat it? How can we remove it? How can we whip it? And will we do so in time? You can be both optimistic and pessimistic about that. When you look at the causes of crime and you discover the root cause, and that is a shocking thing, most people say it's overly simplistic, to say that human nature is at the root of crime, that human nature itself is criminal, that babies are born completely undisciplined and untrained. But listen, let me tell you, if the communists of the world can use communist slogans, endless repetition, discipline, rigid military discipline, training in physical education classes and the like, training the body, training the mind, and make virtual automatons, virtual slaves and dupes out of hundreds of thousands, yes, and even millions of youngsters as they come up, to where no amount of reasoning, no amount of education from the Western world, if we had 100 voices of America and voices of free Europe, even speaking in their language, ringing that nation, we couldn't get the job done. No, nobody can beat those parents. Nobody can beat the factory or the school and the entirety of society. And if all of society and the school system and the religion as it is, in whatever form you find it in those nations, and the parents gang up together and try to make of this child a completely indoctrinated communist, I don't care how much propaganda to the contrary they hear, you're not going to change that little communist mind. No, there are people over there who are absolutely dedicated. We in the Western world are afraid of the word discipline. We seem to be afraid of the word discipline when we apply it to children, to child rearing, to education in the lower ages, clear down in preschool as well as the school ages for children. We seem to be smitten with the notion, because we're living in a time of changing values, a challenge to old mores, traditions, and laws, we seem to be smitten with the notion that there are no absolutes, that you can't really say this is right and that is wrong, and therefore, when someone does something which is supposed to be wrong, that there should be punishment for it. We've gotten to the idea now where no punishment is the method that is advocated by which people ought to rear their children. So we turn around as we look in a society of no punishment, no absolutes, the abolition of strong, swift consequences for crime, the backlog in a helpless morass of months and months and maybe years of criminal cases where this time is coming, presumably, when somebody could murder someone, and maybe he's age 20 when he kills and he's age 30 or 40 before he ever comes to trial. It's not that bad yet, but you really begin to wonder. So we've gotten into a society now where we believe a slap on the wrist and a little kind of a gentle reminder, and we let the criminals go right back into society. But I answered last time whether or not society is all pure and free, and the criminals are in some periphery, and they are products of broken homes, and they're lurking in the hibiscus bushes. And I proved by a thorough study that had been done by thousands of test cases of criminals that the average criminal is exactly like the average everyday citizen. Well, human nature is criminal. That's where crime really comes from. Because human nature is vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. Human nature is deceitful above all things. Human nature, the carnal mind of man, and you find the carnal mind of man analyzed and dissected and revealed plainly for what it is, right in the Word of God, our Creator, the one who made our minds, the one who made our bodies, the Creator who put us on this earth in the first place. I proved there is a God. I proved it on this series of programs, time and time again. I proved it over the years on the program, radio, and now television. But I'm not here to grind an axe religiously or to tell you that you must believe in the doctrines I believe in. I couldn't make you do that. I couldn't be persuasive enough. I couldn't possibly change your mind about those things. But I am here to tell you that your God does exist, and that the Bible is a book about human nature that tells you how your mind works, where your appetites come from, exactly what we are as little babies, and why we have a world that is ridden with crime. Human nature is analyzed, and you can understand why people act the way they do. when you read the book about human nature and the cause of crime. It's all there. It really is.
When a teenager is apprehended by the police for a crime, bewildered parents and relatives often comment that he was always such a good boy, or that he came from a good home. Why do good homes produce criminals? Why do children who have everything turn to crime? What unseen factors turn that baby, a young couple wanted, into a villain wanted by the police? Are some children born to be criminals? In a home where long-range concern for the child is neglected, the result is not a mature, responsible adult human being. To learn more about this and to help protect your child's future, be sure to request The Plain Truth About Child Rearing, a practical guide to parenthood. Your copy is free of charge. Request and read The Plain Truth About Child Rearing.
We're living in a society that has lost its way, that has no standard, no real values. Values are being challenged, institutions being challenged. The very permanence of anything, whether it's an institution, an ideal, is being challenged these days. It seems to be that anything that smacks of permanence, or the so-called status quo, first deserves to be destroyed, without any idea about what it ought to be replaced by, how to replace it, how to improve upon it. No, first let's destroy it, let's tear it down, said the neo-anarchists, and then we'll get about the business of building a new society. Some of the types that have been sensationalized, whose names I don't like to perpetuate in society by mentioning over and over again. The famed Chicago Seven and others of their ilk have said, when asked questions about what they thought in terms of a society to replace the one they seem to be so completely bitter against, they have said, hang all of this, only in words not quite that nice, and said, first let's have the revolution. Let's destroy, let's burn, let's tear down. Then maybe later we can get around to talking about what we ought to put in its place. So we live in a time of the challenging of all values. Child psychology came along in the 30s and the 40s, and many babies do show the spock marks these days. They really do. The child psychologist came along to advocate a no discipline, no punishment. The word no corporal punishment, especially the word corporal punishment, was a horrible word in those days. Gradually it got into the school systems, and so finally they even took punishment out of the school systems. Carried to its ultimate extreme, the idea of no punishment has permeated even not law enforcement so much as the court systems and the entire judiciary system of a nation, where we got the idea that criminals couldn't help themselves, that crime is a kind of a disease, like being twitterpated in reverse. It's like falling in love in reverse. If you got a certain blood type, you're determined and predestined ahead of time to become a criminal. So we got the idea that most people kill in mindless rage, and therefore they were temporarily insane. What we don't seem to realize is that human nature itself is insane. That there is such a thing, the Bible reveals, as a sound mind. It says the spirit of a sound mind. And that a mind that does not have the knowledge of what it is, of why we are on the earth, of what is man, where are we going, what is our purpose in living, and I am fulfilling that purpose. That may not be a sound mind if it lacks that dimension. Having that dimension of the knowledge of what human life is all about and why we're on the earth, and having a spiritual dimension added to the mind, can give you a sound, balanced mind. A mind that is not balanced is imbalanced. A mind that is not sound is unsound. A mind that is not sane is insane. In many ways, you can say human nature itself is insanity, because it is not rational of and by itself. Well, people got the idea that criminals were temporarily insane. They'd been smitten by a moonbeam or something. That's why originally, way back in the old original English language in the medieval times, they used to say people were a lunatic. They had a tick, you know, from the moon, a lunar tick. It's ridiculous. They were smitten with moonbeams. It's a word that we still use today, lunatic, a very inappropriate word. It had to do with mythology and the belief that people wandering around in the light of the moon got smitten by the moon or something like this. It has nothing to do with crime, but still, some of the old foibles and fables exist, don't they? A mindless rage or a temper tantrum, explosion of anger, may well be temporary insanity, all right, But you know, when you stop to think of it, many people have attitudes, racism, hatreds, lust, desires, greed, jealousies, which are insane ideas, which permeate their daily attitudes, their outlook, their way of life as they go about dealing with other people or treating other people on the job. A kind of an insane, mindless rage, barely subdued, barely kept concealed, barely beneath the surface, but motivates hundreds of millions of human beings in their everyday way of life. Now, human nature itself is criminal. I'm tempted to get into something on child-rearing one of these times and just talk about it, about what we are as little babies and how child-rearing leapt the tracks of sanity way back in the idea of progressive education, German rationalism, the no laws, no absolutes, no mores, the idea of changing values, that nothing is good unless it's proved good and tested, the pragmatism of experimentation. And so finally we have come up, in all of history, there's never been anything like it, with an entire generation of young people completely alienated from their elders. And they say that there is so much wrong in society, there's no discovering of it. And they're partly right in that. The elders can take a little bit of a lesson by looking into society and saying, should we challenge its values? Are there mores and principles we have thought were good which were not good? Are there institutions in society right now clung to feverishly by the so-called silent majority which really ought to be changed? Well, that's a possibility. But saying it ought to be changed for the sake of change without knowing what ought to replace it is something else again. We ought to take a good long look at human nature and find out about this thing of discipline and punishment. Look, if the communist nations are using discipline and disciplined teaching, physical teaching as well as mental repetition and theoretical teaching over and over and over again to bring about the creation of a strong, powerful, and oh yes, they have moral principles. Don't think for a moment they don't. Well, they do have a crime problem, and it's growing in the Soviet Union. They do have drunkenness, and that's growing in the Soviet Union. It is fair to say, nevertheless, that those societies are not basically as immoral, and I use that term in the broadest sense of the word, as immoral societies. When you look at marriage, you look at the home, you look at some of the institutions of the communistic societies, that strong discipline has nevertheless left them without some of the problems of the Western societies. It doesn't mean that they are better and that the West is worse on a comparative political basis. I wouldn't want to live under the yoke of communism and that unbelievable dictatorship, which it really is, that totalitarian form of government, for a minute. But nevertheless, there is a stronger family tie in some of those countries that are under the heel of a virtual dictator. Why? Because there is a living principle. Even if it is for the wrong way, that when you train up a child, even in the wrong way, he'll probably stick to that way. The Bible says, over in the 22nd chapter of Proverbs in verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go. And this is talking about God's way, about the Ten Commandments. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. It's a pretty wise saying. The communists know that is true, though they didn't get it out of the Bible. It's merely a principle of theirs. That if you train up a youngster in his most impressionable moments, his earliest age, to be a hardcore communist, the chances are very, very slim that in his older age, he's going to depart from it. They're using those principles for evil. Why can't the Western nations, and why can't we as peoples with our own children, as we rear them, our youngsters as we teach them according to these biblical principles? Let me tell you, it's come so far now. We've gone so far down the drain. I remember a case very, very thoroughly where a woman was in front of a court. There was a divorce. There was a settlement. And it involved who was going to keep the children. And a woman was absolutely ridiculed to the point of embarrassment you wouldn't believe. And they began to demand that a court-appointed psychiatrist examine this woman. And there was some discussion about whether they might even put her away when she admitted in a public courtroom in these United States of America to having tried to rear her children according to the Bible. They ridiculed that woman. They threatened that woman with possible psychiatric examination and maybe being put behind bars because she was willing to admit that she was trying to rear her children according to the laws of her God. How far have we come in society, down the road toward rampant crime, when such a state of affairs can exist?
It's becoming rare to find truly happy marriages. Today's families face the increasing threat of infidelity, separation, and divorce. There are principles, however, which can ensure lasting success for your marriage and help solve existing problems. The Plain Truth magazine brings you the missing dimension in family relations. Incisive articles of understanding discuss parent-child relationships, roles of father and housewife, keys to family success, marital information and guides, closing the generation gap. The Plain Truth comes to you monthly with articles of interest and use to your family, and it's free. Be sure to request The Plain Truth, the world's unique human experience and family magazine.
Now, we know we can discipline horses. We know we can train our dogs. If you were to visit somebody's home and you walk in and their little dog runs out, and grabs you by the ankle and starts gnawing away on you, would you be within your rights to give him a gentle kick? Or would you be within your rights to kind of look annoyed? You know, he's just taking a whole chunk out of your shin and you're kind of standing around in pure agony. And the guest is saying, how are you? And just paying no attention to this dog runs up and bites you right through your trouser leg, takes a chunk out of your shin. It's acceptable. It's commonplace. Weird. No, it isn't either. The dog liable to get stove in ribs, isn't he? He might end up clear flattened against the wall. You might kick the thing clear across the room against the television set. Bounce him off the balcony or something. Would you dare do that with a kid? But people visit people in each other's homes and they walk in and maybe the kid's gnawing on their leg. Or if not, maybe he's throwing something at your kid when you bring him over. Or if not, maybe, you know, even his little tiny babies. You can remember some of the funny scenes they put in motion pictures these days. You've seen a few of them, no doubt. You know, the little baby is being admired, and the relatives come for a visit, and the mother hands over the little cuddly thing, and the uncle is standing there. He's bouncing the little baby, and then this look of kind of sudden surprise comes over him, and he says, here, take him, you know, and then goes away and wonders where the Kleenex box or something like that. And you say, well, that's funny, it's cute, it's acceptable. But man, you know, when you get older, it's not acceptable. We have to train children not to be little savages. Now, we know that we can train dogs and horses and parrots by discipline. We know we can use rewards and punishments, and we know they will learn. But somehow, somewhere, people got the idea that children are different, that they have a tremendous understanding well beyond their years. We think when they're only one or two or three that their minds, boy, they've got minds that are greater than Einstein. They can figure the angles to everything. You wouldn't dare thwart or in any way restrict these minds because you might have a genius there. So when he's in there playing with a lot of things that he shouldn't have his hands in, you don't thwart him. You might stunt his growth. You might warp him in some way. If you just took something away from him and turned him up and did him a few quick slots and spanked the child in love, carefully, so there was never any beating, never any energy. I've got to say that, or a lot of the do-gooder types would send me such an avalanche of hate mail, I wouldn't be able to open it all. They think the minute you say discipline, you mean beat a child to death. These extremes always exist in people's minds. It's either no punishment at all, or you're going to beat the child to death. The idea of loving, kind, firm discipline, swift and sure, yet with patience and with love and with kindness, in exact measure to the offense, judiciously administered, it just seems to get people blind with rage. Well, we can do it to parrots and dogs and horses and all of this, and people just marvel. They go to the zoo, they go to the Barnum and Ringling Circus, and they see elephants and other creatures that can be trained, and they just applaud. Now, that's great. But now, a trained child, we're suspicious of that, walking to somebody's home. Elmer, you know, if that's his name, do this or do that. The child obeys. Well, I've never seen such a thing. I've had people comment about that. They've asked me. They've said, they'll talk about the children. You know, and say, well, we haven't seen such obedient boys before. Go in a restaurant. They come over there. Tell them how you did it. They'll probably break the pottery over your head. Your kids love you. They're respectful. They're obedient. Yes, sir. They'll go and do it. How did you manage to do that? Don't tell them. They're liable to call a cop. They're liable to try to throw you in jail. Oh, we think it's all right to train dogs. I mean, they're worth training. Parrots. Reminds me of a time when a little old lady living all alone. Show you how parrots can learn. They can learn by repetition. They can learn by hearing something over and over again, just the way the communists are trying to teach kids today. The lady lived alone. She went down, she bought a parrot. And she had one of these little peekaboo doors, like so many thousands of us do these days. And every time the doorbell rang, if it was the cleaner or the plumber or the launderer or the milkman or somebody, she would go to the door and she would look out, and then she would have this little communicating thing, and then she'd say, "Who's it?" And the parrot was sitting there, you know, just perched by the door, kind of quiet. All it could hear is this tick-tock of the grandfather clock. No other noise. She had no television. On and on. She'd say, "Who is it?" Well, one day she took her little cart and she went to the store, the grocery shop. She was gone quite a while, and the doorbell rang. From inside, the plumber who was outside heard, "Who is it?" He says, "It's the plumber." And he heard, "Who is it?" He says, "It's the plumber." "Who is it?" "It's the plumber." "Who is it?" And so he got all purple and his veins distended. He says, "It's the plumber," at the top of his voice, and he had a heart attack. And he dropped right there on the steps, and he's lying there, completely passed out, in a heart attack. The little lady comes around the corner, trundling her little cart. She walks up, she sees this, she can't believe it, and she stands on the steps, and she says, "Oh, my, who is it?" From inside, "It's the plumber." Well, so the parrot, after a little bit of repetition, parrots can learn to repeat things. You know, kids can learn to say, "Yes, sir." I'll bet you they can. I know they can. I've seen hundreds of them that have been trained to obey their parents. Well, next time I want to tell you a story. Most parents don't believe they can train their kids. There are 12 rules I'm going to give you next time for absolutely rearing a delinquent child. I'll give you 12 rules on exactly how to do that. But in the meantime, if you write for these booklets, and I'll be announcing one on child rearing before much longer, write for the one on the Ten Commandments and the one on the modern Roman decline of our Western civilization. Here is a booklet that will put you in the scene of the way things are developing to fulfill Bible prophecy right now. Rome fell. That's a fact of history. But why? Changes rapidly began to take place in the social life of Rome that destroyed the family. Children began to rule over their parents. And Rome began to have a juvenile delinquency and a youth gap between the elderly and the young. Divorce began to get epidemic in ancient Rome. And you will see how all of that happened, exactly what led to it, and how that's precisely what is happening to our Western societies today. This booklet, The Modern Romans, will put you in the picture in modern-day United States of America, Canada, Britain, Australia, South Africa, and other countries, and show you how our Western English-speaking world is going the way of ancient Rome. It's free of charge, it's graphically illustrated, it has full-color pictures throughout, and it costs you nothing. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.